Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. With summer camps for pre-K through high school, offering skills in sports, music, and more. luther.edu/summer-camps.
Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
There are a lot of things we might learn from ancient architects. Before air conditioning and central heating and electric light, people who built houses knew a lot more about designing with nature than we do. They paid attention to the transit of the sun, to the cardinal directions, to the seasonal rhythms of light and dark. They built green houses long before anyone coined the term. Today, architects and urban planners are rediscovering what our ancestors took for granted. Ralph Knowles is one of the godfathers of the modern green design movement. He founded the University of Southern California's Solar Studio and taught there for many years. Now retired, he's just published his 9th book on green design. It's called Ritual House, Drawing on Nature's Rhythms. Steve Paulson asked him, why go to so much trouble? Why not just air condition everything?
Interesting question. Why not? Why not air condition everything? And the answer, of course, is if we don't learn somehow to connect our buildings to the basic rhythmic changes of nature, I think we're in big trouble. We've got two things going here. One is an enormous shortage and potential shortage of energy. The other is population growth. In 1950, only New York and all the world had 10 million people. By the year 2000, the number of cities was up around 15 or so that had 10 million or more. And one of those had 20 million, Tokyo. By 2015, there will be 25 cities in the world of 10 million or more, 6 to 9 of those of 20 million. So we've got these twin pressures of a lack of security of our energy supplies and a growing urban population. So how cities use energy is going to determine how most energy in the world will be used. We've got to learn somehow to adapt the growth of these cities to use the sun as a source of energy. It's, after all, available to us at latitudes all the way from far northern Europe, which is at 50 degrees north, to 50 degrees south, and every major city in the world lies within that band. There are countries that are moving much faster than we are. Germany, for example, has what they call a solar cities movement, in which whole cities are adapting the ideas, the planning procedures, the policies, and the design procedures to use the sun as a source of energy.
So what are some of the ideas being tossed around about how to use sun more effectively in the design of cities?
Well, the first thing you need, of course, is solar access for buildings. And I've been working for years on an idea called a solar envelope, which represents the largest volume you can put on a building site without overshadowing your neighbor. It's essentially a requirement for zoning that limits the height and shape of buildings so as not to overshadow your neighbor.
And many architects in previous centuries understood these principles. I mean, you write about the great churches of Western Europe and how they were designed with the sun's progression in mind.
I think there are two things about that. One is, they didn't have mechanical systems, no air conditioning, and so on, so that they had to somehow learn to live with the elements. The other aspect of that is, if you learn to live with the elements, and you do learn, you're responding not to a fixed condition. The sun does not stand still in the sky. The winds do not blow constantly from one direction at a given rate. They change, and they tend to change rhythmically, and therefore predictably. So what the Gothic architects were doing was responding, for example, to sunlight coming through stained glass windows, entering the nave, entering the transept. Going back to the geometry of the sun, in the wintertime, the sun is coming low from the southern sky. So they opened the west windows of the nave to that low winter sun. The summer sun is high in the sky, so it barely gets in. So they were responding to that basic rhythm, a seasonal rhythm of the sun, primarily in the nave of the church, where the transept catches the morning light from one side and the afternoon light from the other side. So there was a basic diurnal rhythm that was at work in the transept. They learned to use the rhythmic ways that the sunlight entered those great cathedrals to enhance the quality of the space and to reinforce the rituals that were going on in the church.
Well, it makes you wonder how we respond to that emotionally. I mean, especially given the whole sense of ritual that's so powerful in a church like a Gothic cathedral.
Sure. I've thought a lot about that. I've sat for long periods of time in cathedrals to watch the sun move, to watch it move differently in the different spaces. And I finally decided that while a tourist is not going to appreciate that, the people who live there, who spend time in that church, who come back maybe daily or certainly they come back weekly or monthly, they're going to be aware on some level. They may not be able to describe it to you, but surely they're going to feel it, and it's going to affect their, not just their bodies, it's going to affect their souls.
And didn't the Native American cliff dwellers in the Southwest also have a fairly sophisticated sense of solar design?
Yeah, they certainly did. If you look at something like Mesa Verde, there are many south-facing caves at Mesa Verde, and what happens is that the low winter sun enters under the brow of that cave and heats and lights the cave in the wintertime. In the summertime, the sun, as I said before, is high in the sky, and it doesn't get into the cave. So you have a natural air conditioning system in the summertime and a natural heating system in the wintertime. That principle can be applied to buildings. We can design buildings that absorb the heat in wintertime from the sun and that keep it out in the summertime. So these are basic principles that we've got to employ. In many cases, we've got to relearn them. They've been around for centuries and centuries, thousands of years, really.
So for those of us who are not architects or urban planners, what do we do with this kind of thinking if we want to incorporate nature's rhythms more into our own lives?
Part of that, I think, is, as all things educational, schools of architecture have to start thinking about adaptations to nature other than bigger heaters and bigger coolers. We've got to learn how to design with nature. And it's for two basic reasons. One is energy. And I think the other is a less well understood and less talked about aspect of it, and that is the quality of life. Can we bring the joy of nature into our buildings? I think that has to become a major objective of architecture. We've spent now decades in admiration for the machine and machine building and machine living. I think what we're now experiencing is a rejection of that. And the question is, what comes next? If we reject the modern movement, postmodern movement, the deconstruction movements, all of these styles that isolated us from nature, if we reject those things, where do we go? And the answer has to be that we have to relearn how to live with nature. There could be many ways to do it, and there will be many answers to that, but it's the next big task.
Ralph Knowles is Professor Emeritus at the University of Southern California's School of Architecture. He's written 9 books on solar design. The most recent is called Ritual House, Drawing on Nature's Rhythms. Steve Paulson spoke with him.